The following audio file was recorded on April 8th in Nashville, Tennessee by Earnhardt Productions Incorporated at a voting rights and election reform conference titled Gathering to Save Our Democracy. It has been uploaded to this site courtesy of the January 30th Coalition, an Ohio-based voting rights group which endorsed the conference. You are welcome to copy and distribute or broadcast this recording. Please also consider making a donation to Radio for All so that recordings like this one can continue to be made available.
Sharing with the rest of the country and the world what we've been sharing with each other for months now. And I am very excited to spend the next hour listening to the media. And just briefly, the power of instantaneous communication these days I think is our nuclear weapon, to quote our president. I think the ability for us to engage through the internet, to communicate and coalesce around these issues is fortunately something that has not yet been taken away from us and hopefully won't be. And just as an illustration of that, our local paper, the Nashville Tennessean, ran a column a month and a half ago now, I guess, by our first speaker, Robert Kohler, who did an excellent job in an op-ed column describing condensing the Conyers report and other evidence from Ohio. And to his credit, Bob lists his email address on the bottom of his column. So I wrote him and thanked him for his column and told him about the conference, and lo and behold, he responded to me. And so we started emailing back and forth, and within a week, Bob had agreed to join us and be on the panel. So we do have very powerful tools still in our possession, and I think we're all expecting some controls being placed on that media or attempts to place controls on our ability to communicate, something else we have to keep from happening. So this morning we are going to hear from three representatives of the media. Again, Robert Kohler, syndicated columnist with the Tribune Media Services, Bob Fetrakis, our patron for this gathering, and the founder of freepress.org, and Brad Friedman, the founder of Bradblog. And I do believe Brad might be sharing some breaking news at some point with us, or a reaction to the breaking news. But that's what this whole conference is about, is to break both an old story and new stories regarding the election fraud. So after the media panel, again, we are very privileged to have both Arlie Reitz, the vice chairman of the Libertarian National Committee, and David Cobb, the 2004 presidential candidate for the Green Party, who will be speaking to us about our issues being a fundamentally uniting issue across all political persuasions. So without any further ado, Bob Kohler.
Thanks, Bernie. It's really a privilege to be here. And in a minute, I'm going to be talking about my own paper, the Chicago Tribune. And it's not going to be, I'm not going to say some nice things, but I do want to say out front, the Tribune paid my way here. So they're not all bad. Thank you, Mother Tribune. Two weeks after George W. Bush got his mandate, quote unquote, from the American people, I began thinking as a writer about election reform, and then I stopped. The mainstream media did its job on me. My talk this morning is about the game of words, the words that run through our lives, written and spoken, in the daily newspaper, on the radio, on television. They bathe us in reality, this stream of words, bringing reassurance, bringing anxiety. In the main stream in which these words flow, Terry Schiavo's feeding tube matters far more than election reform. Let's imagine just for a moment that this weren't the case, that the questions raised at this conference could garner one Schiavo-caliber headline in, say, tomorrow's New York Times. Election results in doubt. I mean, let's just imagine that, just, you know. Sadly, what I have to talk about is just another form of fraud. America voted last November. Untold thousands of voters were harassed and intimidated. Maybe millions of voters were cheated out of their votes. Kerry apparently was the public's choice, and the media responded like a pre-programmed Diebold machine. Election conspiracies live on. This is the headline of a Chicago Tribune editorial on the topic of this weekend's conference. The Tribune is my newspaper. I work in Tribune Tower, 10 floors above the newsroom, making my living as an editor for Tribune Media Services, which is the company's syndicate. And I'm also syndicated by this syndicate. It's not the usual route to syndication, getting a job there first, then finagling a chance to write a lifestyle column that was, in essence, filler material for weekly shoppers, and slowly nurturing that into a political column with a national base. It took some persistence on my part, or at least desperation. And it's why I have managed, for better or for worse, to remain an outsider. I feel as though I found a small opening in Fortress Media through which to channel a progressive voice that doesn't have to please a gauntlet of editors, and I can write what I want. Of course, they can publish me or not. But on the topic of the 2004 election, I was close enough to the gravitational pull of the giant to have gotten waylaid by it. And normally, I avoid Chicago Tribune editorials, but I read this one because I was going into fact vacuum mode, and I wanted to begin absorbing as much data as possible, in order to become knowledgeable about the 2004 election, the results of which troubled me deeply. In fact, my biggest concern moving into this was that I was so distressed by the results that I would find what I was looking for, evidence that, you know, there was some problems and that Kerry, maybe got cheated. I would find that because I was looking for it. And as a progressive voice trying to crack the op-ed real estate turf of the mainstream, I need to maintain high standards of credibility. So I begin with this confession. Even though I always disagree with Tribune editorials and have my guard up when I read them, I was still derailed by this one, and it delayed my personal inquiry into the 2004 election for 3 months because of it. This is the power of words. If I can be shut down, so can millions of readers who were less motivated than I was to see beyond them. I think this is the place to start then, because this editorial is typical of what the mainstream media was writing shortly after the election. There is a remarkable unanimity within the MSM, a remarkable lack of independence. Watergate icon Bob Woodward reflecting on the lousy coverage the Washington Post had on the buildup to war with Iraq admitted, "I think I was part of the groupthink." The consensus for war had taken over the Post newsroom, just as it had the New York Times and many other newsrooms, and the war's doubters kept quiet lest they see their careers marginalized. I'm going to read part of this editorial for the purpose of taking it apart so we can get a handle on how, if not why, media outlets serve the status quo of power. Context, or what George Lakoff in his excellent book, Don't Think of an Elephant, has called Framing is Everything. And when the mainstream media are set in their consensus, their wordsmiths are masterful at framing the issue so that casual readers, which is to say most of the American public, the ones who live in what Josh called the social reality, find themselves herded into an acceptable range of opinion without ever knowing that's where they are. Ever since the November 2nd election, this editorial begins, the internet has been blazing with cries and whispers that the election was hijacked by Republican operatives. These theories range from the bizarre to the merely implausible, with some academics across the country apparently feeding the conflagration. I think some of them are here right now. With statistical analyses that seem to support the contention of a nefarious plot to steal the election. Okay, conspiracy, hijack, conflagration, nefarious. The Tribune has defined the parameters of reason with regard to the November 2nd election so narrowly that you can't read on with any kind of trust from this first paragraph with what literary critics call sympathetic contract without joining the editorialist in tacit solidarity against the crazies and hotheads out there who always have something to complain about and see the world as a silent movie melodrama, which I think is the last known abode of all nefarious plots. The writer was one tick of compunction away from using the word dastardly. So go ahead, join these crazies who think mustachioed villains stole the election, if you want. Otherwise, join the Tribune in certifying its legitimacy. So far, the editorial continues, it's safe to say nothing has emerged that would threaten to change the outcome. What infuriating indifference to the allegations of essentially Jim Crow-style disenfranchisement of the African-American and Latino precincts of battleground states. What an outrageous placement as well of the cart before the horse. A sealing shut of the door of inquiry into and concern about the election's integrity with the phrase threatened to change the outcome. Aren't they getting it backwards? Irregularities should be thoroughly investigated whether they change the outcome or not, for God's sake. But here the Tribune is telling us not only that the ones challenging the election are conspiracy nuts, but that it doesn't matter anyway. Because nothing they say is going to take 3.5 million votes away from George Bush nationwide or 130,000 in Ohio. Here, I believe, is where the game starts to be given away. The Tribune and the whole Fourth Estate establishment had a vested interest, not necessarily in George Bush being president, but in the sacrosanct nature of whatever was initially declared. They covered the election like they cover sports, in other words, the winner, the loser, except they cover baseball and football and basketball a lot better. They tell us about the steroids. They'll tell us about recruitment violations. But all the mainstream articles on the election that I have looked at closely seem to take the Tribune editorialist's nervous and defensive stance towards the cries and whispers of election irregularity and possible fraud. The American public may be ready to know that Sammy Sosa and Mark McGuire got juiced, but not that the raw struggle for political power will subvert democracy if we don't stop it. Like many people, I read the election coverage hungry for a sense of Fourth Estate independence and protection, evidence that they're watching out for our rights. Instead, I got the sound of a door closing shut on the relevance of those rights. When it comes to elections, there ought to be some idealism coursing through the coverage. Instead, I think the motto for the world's oldest and most aggressive democracy has changed from of the people, by the people, and for the people, to Ohio Secretary of State Kenneth Blackwell's all-purpose cop-out. There's no such thing as an error-free election. But inquiries continue, both official and unofficial, the editorial goes on. And even though many popular rumors are debunked almost as soon as they gain circulation, wide circulation, and now here I have to interrupt again, long enough to point out that neither this editorial nor any other coverage in the paper that I'm aware of took the trouble to write about in detail, let alone adequately explain any of these so-called rumors, including, one, the long lines, dirty tricks, withheld voting machines, and provisional ballots of inner-city precincts, which combined with infamous felony purges and the various spurious and obviously partisan challenges to legitimate voters, seemingly constitute outright disenfranchisement, not to mention a violation of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Two, the discrepancy, as we've heard a lot about so far, between the vote totals in many of the swing states, most notoriously Ohio and Florida, but also Pennsylvania and elsewhere, and the totals of the exit polls that picked Kerry the winner by the margin by which it turned out he was instead the loser. The odds against such a swing having been placed by statisticians at 1,000,000 to 1. And in fact, that when something similar happened in Ukraine, cries of fraud rang loudly here in the United States. Three, the numerous reports of mechanical malfunctions, overvotes, and voter complaints that their machine kept registering a tally for the wrong guy, not to mention the lack of security and easy hackability of these machines and other opportunities for mischief, the lack of a paper trail, and the partisanship of the various voting machine companies. Four, the blatant partisanship of Secretary of State Blackwell and all the petty obfuscations and technical roadblocks he put in place to hold down the minority vote. Or five, the fact that all of the above items, which individually could be written off as accidental, inconsequential, or par for the course, add up to a virtual statistical impossibility when almost without exception the errors, the accidents, and the long lines went against Kerry and favored Bush. Sadly, my point is that the first time I plowed through this editorial, I didn't know any of that stuff. And in my ignorance and innocence, not having examined the election irregularities in any depth, I was cannonballed by it. This is the power of mockery, and the mainstream media uses it well. I felt too depressed to pursue the issue within the limited research window I have as a columnist. Words have an emotional impact that goes far beyond the factual content of what they say. Not only that, words have authority, especially when they come wrapped in the context of moral legitimacy. The mainstream media is the communications equivalent of the American Medical Association. If your doctor tells you there was something funny about that chest x-ray, you're going to listen to what she says next with rapt attention. Likewise, if the mainstream media had said there was something funny about the election, the public would sit up and take notice. The media have the sacred social role of bringing intelligence to the public at large. Think of the town crier. Bill Moyers quotes veteran journalist Richard Reeves as telling a student, "Real news is the news you and I need to keep our freedoms." Scandal coverage, whether that scandal is significant or trivial, is characterized by a let the chips fall where they may aggressiveness in the reporting process. That is, the facts of the matter, whatever they are, must be exhaustively outed. They come first, the status quo comes second. It's what you might call a reality free-for-all. The facts overwhelm the spin, and there are those who think mainstream reportage would benefit from a lot more of that. There seems to be a lock in place right now on this kind of reporting. Maybe it's because of 911 and the fact that a be afraid, be very afraid attitude, or what I would call a concede everything to the terrorists attitude, has seized the media. By the tens of millions, Americans carefully did their jobs as the citizens of a democracy now deep into its third century. This is from another Tribune editorial written on November 3rd. They turned out to vote. They voted. They often waited in long lines to do so. And for the most part, they worked out their glitches without getting their shorts in a knot. Well, okay. There you have it. The editorial goes on in what has to be 40s Americana, Frank Capra, Jimmy Stewart mode, extolling all the It's a Wonderful Life little people who did their civic duty with pride and silent dignity. The cacophony of fussing and fretting wasn't coming from dutiful American citizens, the Tribune tells us, but rather paid party mouthpieces. In one telling kerfuffle, it goes on, and that is the word that it used. Kerfuffle. Okay. In one telling kerfuffle, a Democrat in Beaver Township, Ohio, had trouble casting her vote. Gosh. When I hit Carrie, nothing happened, she told a reporter. I pushed Carrie again and again, and nothing happened. I pushed a third time, and Bush lit up. This is right here in the editorial. But guess what? And listen, some of you statisticians who've been talking, listen to this. On her fourth try, she says, she successfully cast her vote. No histrionics, no cameras, and no lawyers. So what's the problem? Come on! And this is how the mainstream media covered the 2004 election. There were a few kerfuffles, but no need to get your shorts in a knot. What kind of Americans get their shorts in a knot anyway? Obviously, it's the sort who were convenient foils for Hollywood scriptwriters of 60 years ago. But it's only because of them that I wound up shaking myself free of the Tribune's emotional impact and revisiting election 2004 and the cause of election reform. And it's because of you people in this room, and I mean, my heart is just, I'm at a loss for words at how much I admire everybody I've heard speak so far. You didn't go away, despite the indifference and mockery of the mainstream media coverage, but you kept lighting up the blogs and the alternative press and pushing on, and I finally began researching the matter and writing about it because the noise was so relentless. On issues of national import, the mainstream media, sadly, like much of the Democratic Party, are followers, not leaders. Yet I remain optimistic that those of us not locked into the prejudices and frightened pseudo-patriotism of the mainstream can wake it up and divert its energy to the cause of saving America's democracy. God help us if we can't. Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Brad Friedman, Thank you. Author of bradblog.com. I was up kind of late last night doing the media's job for them. I was interviewing Clint Curtis on videotape till about 2 a.m., wondering why I was interviewing Clint Curtis on videotape till 2 a.m. Is anybody here not familiar with the Clint Curtis story? Okay. You guys should pay attention more. Clint actually is going to be here later this afternoon, and I will, for a change, let him tell you his story. But I will tell you that, and I can break a bit of news here this morning, Clint Curtis has passed a lie detector test. He took this polygraph exam about a month ago, and I knew about it. I did not break it on Brad Blog because I had preferred that the mainstream media would report this part of the story. We gave this tip to a writer by the name of Lucy Morgan at the St. Petersburg Times. She said she would be writing about it. She just needed another week. She just needed another week. One more week. All right, well, we gave her a month, and this morning, in fact, she did break the story in the St. Petersburg Times. That's the good news. The bad news is the headline is Blogs Spin Tale of Computers and Conspiracies. On March 3, she says, Curtis passed a lie detector test given by Tim Robinson, retired chief polygraph operator for the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. After that, fair and balance requires, apparently, that she quotes Tom Feeney, saying, all I can tell you is I didn't do any of the illegal things Curtis says I did. Feeney said, and I didn't lead the purple Martian invasion of Earth either. The response from Curtis that she quotes is non-existent. She does go on, however, to say that Feeney complains that Curtis didn't accuse him of tampering with an election until the election controversy in Ohio arose, referring to unproven allegations of voting irregularities in 2004. If we could only come up with some proof that there was election irregularities in 2004, we could hold a conference in Nashville and talk about it for a weekend. Anyway, I'll let Clint speak about his case a little bit later in another forum. That's the mainstream media for you. When I heard that Bob Kohler was going to be here, I thought he was the bravest man in the mainstream media for showing up with this group here. Turns out he's one of the good guys in the mainstream media. So I thank you, Bob, for coming, and welcome. Folks like Bob Fetrakis, by the way, another hero of this story. Folks like Bob and others in the alternative independent media have been reporting on what's gone on. Bloggers like myself are on the job, whether we want to be or not. But by and large, the mainstream corporate media, of course, has been completely and wholly derelict in their duty to the American people, period. They have failed in their job as watchdog. The once great Fourth Estate is either completely dead or in what appears to be a permanent vegetative state. I suggest we remove the feeding tube altogether. Now, why are they ignoring the stories that directly impact our country and our democracy? This is a question that I get asked all the time. I don't have a real answer, but I can talk to you about some of my experiences. I know that, and I believe all of you people know, that these are very important stories. The Clint Curtis story alone, and just to give the three or four of you who don't know about it an idea, he was asked, he claims to be asked, by a Republican congressman by the name of Tom Feeney to create a vote-rigging software prototype. Back in 2000. He claims this in a sworn affidavit and has claimed it in sworn testimony before members of the U.S. House Judiciary Committee. That has been videotaped, and that is, in fact, on bradblog.com. Nonetheless, there's no evidence of wrongdoing. So, these are important stories. Seems to me they ought to be out there investigating. Seems to me they ought to be out there debunking, if they can, these important stories. So why are they not? Are they lazy? Are they cowed by their right-leaning corporate paymasters and political influences? Are they biased towards conservatives? Are they terrified of losing their jobs? The answer seems to be yes, 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 and yes. I'm glad Bob Kohler still has a job. Now, in the early morning hours of November 3rd, I started reporting on what seemed to have gone terribly wrong somehow. I didn't understand it, but I thought it was worth reporting. At the time, I sent a note out to some of the other bloggers out there, progressive bloggers, suggesting that they cover what is appearing to be some irregularities in the election. Now, at the time, there was no proof, I guess, that anything had gone wrong, that Kerry might have won Ohio. If you read the St. Petersburg Times, you will hear that there is still no proof that anything went wrong in Ohio. Oddly enough, even some of those progressive bloggers out there were afraid to cover this story for some reason. Many of them that I like quite a bit, that I used to read quite a bit. Not as much now. So I and others kept going nonetheless and reporting on what we were hearing. I was trying to stick to confirmable, verifiable facts. Not conspiracy theories, not speculation. And I found that they were always, of course, all of these reports that were coming out always followed the same pattern. They were always showing that some irregularity or another benefited George W. Bush. What the hell was going on? I didn't know. Frankly, I still don't know. But all I can do is report confirmable facts. That's what I've been trying to ask the mainstream media to do for a long time. Now, a few weeks after the election, finally the New York Times decided to report that maybe there was something that went wrong in Ohio. They discussed in a story by Tom Zeller Jr. He spoke about conspiracy theories, liberal bloggers, tinfoil hats, and all manners of things that I found to be quite objectionable, actually. So I wrote a fairly terse and perhaps somewhat impolitic response to Mr. Zeller's article on the Brad blog, entitled, well, we're in a church, so it was F.U. New York Times. Now, by the next day, the rage that I was feeling had formed itself into something a bit more useful instead, and I wrote an article more politely titled, 15 Unanswered Questions That the New York Times May Wish to Investigate and Report On. I included a link to Tom Zeller Jr.'s email address. Oddly enough, I heard nothing in reply from Mr. Zeller, nor from the Times ombudsman and apologist, Daniel Okrent. Then the Clint Curtis story broke, and it broke big, and it broke in such a way that, in fact, it broke my blog, and it took it down for 4 days entirely. I had to set up a temporary blog until I could get a new one where the server could handle the traffic. And then all of a sudden, I began to hear from the mainstream media. It is a compelling story. And so I heard from Newsweek and the Washington Post. I heard from 60 Minutes. I heard from a lot of people who are interested in this story. And then I heard from Tom Zeller Jr. of the New York Times. He called. I said, "Tom, nice to hear from you." I said, "I've been writing about you, Tom." He said, "Yes, I know." I said, "Have you gotten some email from Brad blog readers?" "Yes, I have." He wanted to talk about the Clint Curtis story, and I was interested in talking to him about the Clint Curtis story, but I had, of course, 15 unanswered questions that I thought the New York Times should investigate and report on. So we spent about 2 hours talking about that before I ever mentioned Clint Curtis at all. I said to Tom, "Look, there are things out there that if you feel they are conspiracy theories, do me a favor. Go prove to America that these are conspiracy theories. Go prove to America that these things didn't happen." There was 45... There was 4,500 votes that we know just disappeared in Carteret County, North Carolina. The Board of Elections admits that it was gone. These were on a machine called a Unelect system. Unelect confirms they were gone. They told the county that the machine would store 10,000 votes. It turns out it only stores 3,000 votes. There's no paper trail, so 4,500 votes disappeared. Now, I'm not sure, but I'm fairly certain that Unelect does not produce one machine at a time. If this machine in North Carolina, made by Unelect, with software by Unelect, lost 4,500 votes because the memory chip would only carry 3,000 votes instead of the 10,000 promised, I wonder if there was any other machines in the United States of America made by Unelect with the same software that might have lost more votes. As it turns out, Unelect produces machines for Ohio. I asked Tom, why don't you go to Ohio and find out if they're using Unelect machines there, and maybe if any of them lost 4,500 votes for any candidate? Well, we had a nice discussion. Now I like him. After we got off the phone, he in fact did go down to Ohio and started reporting some things from on the ground there in Ohio for the New York Times just before he was given a four-month vacation. I'm sure it's a coincidence. Another writer from the New York Times, who I spoke with recently, not to pick on the New York Times or anything, Judith Miller, contacted me about a group that I was helping to form called blogcall.org. The original mission of blogcall.org was to take some of the reports that folks like me, progressive bloggers, were doing, the investigative work we were doing, and try and get it out to the mainstream. Invite them, the mainstream media, to join us on conference calls, weekly conference calls, where they could ask us questions and we could give this information to them. This writer was interested, a New York Times writer was interested in the blog call concept, wanted to do a story on it, and said that we interviewed about it for a while, and he would get back to me after he pitched it to his editor. Now, the purpose of blog call really was to counter what we see in the right wing. The right wing has apparently no problem getting their stories out to the mainstream media. And by the way, they don't have to be true stories. They don't have to have any facts in them. But they get out. You know the way it works. Someone on the internet writes it. Drudge links to it. That day, it's on Rush and Sean and O'Reilly. By that evening, it's on Fox News. And, of course, CNN and MSNBC don't want to miss anything. So they cover it. And by the next day, the New York Times feels, well, everybody is talking about this issue. It's on all the cable news channels. We better cover it. So in 24 hours now, it's in the New York Times. That's the way the right wing works. On the left wing, I guess, where we actually report facts with evidence, we don't have it quite so easy. So the blog call was meant to sort of begin to help that. So the New York Times writer calls me back the next day, and he asked me, well, I really want to do this story, but my editor is concerned. We need balance. Can you think of any similar groups on the right, any similar network that's set up on the right to accomplish this? I said, have you heard of Fox News? I think he got my message. He wrote the story. The first third of the story covered blog call and those people who were organizing it. The second two-thirds of the story was filled with quotes from folks who run sites like powerlineblog.com, the right-wing blog, the one that helped convince America that Dan Rather put fake documents on the air on purpose, and another site some of you guys may be familiar with, a nice, nonpartisan, fair, and balanced site called freerepublic.com. They got a lot of ink in this article. That's balance. Balance being the phony baloney concept invented by right-wingers to help make charlatans look good. Balance would require that a story with Holocaust survivors also include an interview with Eichmann. For balance. In fact, C-SPAN, you'd think that was a joke, but C-SPAN did almost exactly that about 2 weeks ago. They had a historian talking about the Holocaust, so to provide balance, they also gave airtime to Holocaust deniers. That's balance. So, there's a writer, another writer. All I can do is speak from my experience. Another writer from, we'll say, a major wire news service. Every time I break a story, and I've broken quite a few, if you guys are familiar with bradblog.com, and I try to go out of my way before breaking anything, and I can't say this for everybody on the internet, certainly not everybody on the left on the internet, but I actually try to get the evidence before I make the report. I try not to speculate, I try to give real news. On the other hand, this major wire news service person, every time I break one of these stories, tells me, oh, it's not news. Why aren't you covering it? It's not news. It's not news. A fake, phony voting rights group by the name of American Center for the Voting Rights has been set up on a Thursday by the general counsel to Bush Cheney 04 Inc. and the communications director for the RNC. It has been set up on a Thursday as a nonpartisan group, and by Monday they're testifying before Congress as longtime voting rights advocates. They're not identifying themselves. The fact that they happen to be with the RNC and the Bush-Cheney Commission, well, that's not news. Democrats do that all the time. Really, do they? Can you give me an example of that? Well, there's astroturfing. This has been going on for years. Corporate groups and lobbyists, they set up these phony nonpartisan organizations. Really? Okay. Can you give me any example of a political party doing this? Directly high-level Democratic operatives actually setting up a group, calling themselves nonpartisan, and testifying before Congress in a hearing which is examining the very thing that they may have been criminally a part of. Can you give me an example of that? Well, no, I can't. Well, is it news? No, it's not news. We're still waiting for her to report on that story. I'm sure it will be coming any moment. She has promised she's going to get the 501c3 from this group, and once she finds out if it's not valid, she will be reporting it. Stand by your computers. It should be coming out any moment. The media is essentially reporting what the politicians tell them to report. But only certain politicians, namely it's Republicans these days, or failing Democrats. In the case of election 2004, it was the failing Democrats deciding for the fourth estate somehow what they would and what they wouldn't report. In this case, it was Senator Never Surrender who gave up the following morning after the election that determined that there's no story here. If the challenger lost the race and he concedes, it doesn't matter if more people in America may have voted for him. The guy who lost doesn't care, so why should the media cover it? Because it's your job, media. You're not working for the Democrats. You're not working for the Republicans. You're working for the American people. The media is not to take their cues from the political party. They work for us. They need to work for us. So I can stop doing what I'm doing. I have no business doing what I'm doing. I'm not a journalist. I didn't go to J school. I'm an actor. I'm a software programmer. I'm a producer. What the hell am I doing their job for them? Well, I guess I have no choice, do I? Because until they start doing it, I guess it's up to guys like me and Bob Fetrakis and, real American citizens who decide, you know what, I'm going to get a blog. Please, people, go get a blog. It's free. Go to blogger.com. You guys can have one set up in 15 minutes and you can start causing the same crap that I'm starting. Please do. Someone's got to. Now, this is where, things are moving. This is where the new generation comes in. We're going to have to keep doing this, but you guys have to do it. It's not enough for us to talk to each other. You need to support sites like mine. You need to create them on your own. You need to pass the information out to people that you know and make sure they hear about it. I will tell you this, Tom DeLay is not going to set my news agenda, period. I'm going to set the news agenda. If only I had naked pictures of Tom Feeney running a gay escort service, I could get this story out there. Or if Tom DeLay wanted to insert a feeding tube into Clint Curtis, then maybe we'd get the story out there. So I got to finish up here. I can't give you one single excuse for the failure of the mainstream media, but the truth is, I could be here all day, obviously, outlining what is wrong with them. They don't work for you and me anymore. You guys need to hold them responsible. You guys need to start sending them email and supporting those folks who do do the job for you. The best that I can come up with is they're frightened. They're frightened. They don't want to lose their very well-paid jobs for the most part, certainly paid better than I'm paid. And it's difficult to buck the system when, as George Bush might say, you need to put food on your family. Guys, do something, take action, cancel your cable and newspaper subscriptions, take that money, send it to, donate to guys like Bob Petrakis, feel free to donate to guys like me, and other sites out there that you like that are doing the work that you need, but do something, do anything, keep making noise. As the new progressive radio station in Los Angeles likes to say, we are all that's left. So please, guys, continue your support and keep up the good fight. Thank you.